is no better place.
It's time to talk.
The only way to get anything done in Cork is going to Neil Prendergast, you know?
Fair play.
Talk to Neil Prendergast.
That's a Cork threat at this stage, I think.
The Neil Prendergast Show on Red FM.
I just love Cork people.
Conversation that matters.
And be part of the conversation, the Neil Prendergast Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. Paperwise this morning, some of the online editions and some in print this morning. A story that I dealt with some weeks back, of course, was the work being done by Support After Crime for many years. And then everybody was alarmed to hear that funding was withdrawn from the Department of Justice. I spoke with staff members on the air, and indeed many people who would avail of the services over the years, people who need help and support after crime, help to go to court, help to write and indeed read their victim impact statements in court, people who need services after being attacked or victims of crime. All of this was being done by Support After Crime, but there's been anomalies at the charity. I know we spoke about this some weeks ago, and it's sad, really, considering all the great work that was being done over the years. But the Echo this morning, anomalies at charity. Apparently there was over-reporting of client numbers, use of government funding for ineligible travel and subsistence claims, and record-keeping issues. These were among the ways that the Cork-based Support After Crime didn't comply with the charity's code. Now, the Echo got this through a Freedom of Information request, where they spoke of, in the Freedom of Information request, a lack of proper record-keeping, making it impossible to verify how many actual victims were helped by the charity, and there was a lack of documentation to back up claims. So there is one figure where they talk of €14,000 of Department of Justice money paid out for ineligible claims. So that's a sad end to what would have been and had been for many years a great, great service. There a lot of crime, actually, and you know, it just goes from bad to worse. Don't kid yourself, there are more people unfortunately appearing before the courts now than ever before on a lot of old-style traditional crimes, but a lot of new types as well. See that story making the Examiner today, it's the front page of the Examiner, where they say that military weapons are now being ordered online and they're getting into the country and they're adding to people's gun collection. Like the Examiner this morning says, guards have described as very concerning the arrest of three young friends caught with a military assault rifle, a semi-automatic handgun, and rounds of ammunition bought on the dark net. Like, why would you even want this kind of stuff? I mean, if you were a collector, surely you'd be getting ones that have been decommissioned or things that, you know, wouldn't be able to fire. I mean, why would you be ordering ammunition? But there it is nonetheless, and worse still, that it gets into the country. And then from that, with regards to military weapons, to people trafficking, the Echo this morning, and well, this should be a front page story when you think of it, big headline, and three men arrested in County Cork on Saturday as part of an investigation into human trafficking and labour exploitation. In their 30s and 40s, detained at Garda stations in Cork at the weekend. The arrests follow five searches in Cork and two up in Roscommon. People trafficking. You know, there's nothing actually that we don't have when it comes to criminal activity in Ireland anymore. You know, many of these types of stories that you hear of, you know, would be stories from America or other countries like that. But no, everything's here now. And also, you know, we thankfully, to some extent, I suppose, there's got to be some good news. The Sun this morning saying that the number of Gardaí is on the increase for the first time in years. Apparently, there's 746 trainee guards entered Templemore in Tipperary. It's the highest number since 2018. So the number of Gardaí on the streets will be, for the first time, more than 14,000. So that's got to be a good news. That's got to be good news. Still not half enough, of course, and unfortunately, all too often, the lion's share of them goes to the capital. But then, Gardaí, when they do their work, do you ever see the videos? You can see them online. I saw some at the weekend. I don't know if it was related to this case, but it was certainly one where the Gardaí threw out the stingers to halt vehicles that just won't stop. Boy, those cars stop when they drive over the stingers, don't they? But apparently the story goes of a man in his 40s arrested after the Gardaí had what they call a managed containment operation. It's where they throw out the stingers, the spikes, and they then blow all of the tires, and the car can only do one thing, and that is stop. Apparently this car came to their attention first up in Faggot Hill in the northwest of the city yesterday, and then it took off towards Cork City. It collided with a Garda car, and it collided as well with stationary vehicles, and the guards deployed the stinger device and comes to a stop in and around the Thomas Davis Street area of Blackpool. So a lot of crime for you, making the papers today, a lot of criminal activity. The front of the Mirror this morning leads with the reality TV star Huey Maughan been charged with a brawl outside a pub at the weekend. That's sad because I have great time for Huey. He's a great guy and well able to, you know, talk up and have opinions on different things, particularly with regards to his own background within the travelling community. Don't know what that's about. TV star Huey on pub brawl rap. There's footage as well of that apparently online. And then, of course, on Friday, we have the referendum, or is it the referenda? Because you've got more than one vote. There are two. And there, of course, are sides to this. There's the yes side and there's the no side. There always is. And it's about balance, I suppose, with regards to whatever I do this week. But I would be very interested in getting your thoughts on the upcoming referendum. I won't say much more about it apart from some of the headlines today with the Irish Times this morning, quoting many people, including the Minister, Roderick O'Gorman. He's saying that a yes vote would not result in an increase in immigration because of the reunification of family rules. I'll deal with this in a few minutes' time. And he pledged that the yes vote would not take away the rights of disabled people. So it's like the more you read into this and the more you study of it, you see the more things that it will or will not impact on in either a positive or a negative way, depending on, you know, how you think yourself and how you intend to vote on one or both. But Michael McDougall then makes the star this morning, saying that the upcoming referendum is a mistake in the making, which will bring chaos to family law, chaos to tax and family immigration laws. It would be a step towards, however, others then, of course, disagree with that, saying that it would be a step towards addressing inequalities which some families face. This is the first occasion in which the Irish people are being asked to take the only reference to motherhood out of the Constitution. So, all of the papers are talking, a lot of them then have explainers, which is very good. You know the Q&As that the papers do, the Irish Times have got a full page on it this morning. What's it all about? What kind of questions you might potentially have, they try and answer. There was another very good one in the Journal over the weekend. A story, and more on that later on. Your thoughts are welcome. Text 0868104106. Story we were dealing with last week, of course, on air, had much to do with HSC staff, particularly those in housekeeping. But there is another string to that story with regards to staff in the HSE, and it's the front of the Mail today, where there's over 2,000 HSE staff who are out now on career breaks. And the worry is that when they go back after their career break, that their jobs won't be there because there'll be no money to pay them. There's a show on RTE tonight. It's called RTE Investigates Botox and Beauty at Any Cost. It's at 9:35, and it talks about Botox being illegally moved through hair salons and administered by unqualified people. The result of this, of course, is devastating and permanent damage done to people's faces, and the show will lay bare the consequences of a largely unregulated cosmetic industry in Ireland. Now, it's a big article on unregulated Botox injections in the Mail this morning, but the show is on tonight. Another thing that is regulated or unregulated, not quite sure which way to look at this, is the amount of turf that's been caught in the Irish bogs. Apparently they've gone up into the sky and they use satellite images from Google Earth to try and find out just how much turf is being cut. You know the way the law changed, the turf can only be cut now for home use, and you can't cut turf to sell it to anybody. It's just for family, or I suppose depends on, you know, how extensive your family is. But they are saying that the cutting for home use is 162 times over the actual legal or allowed limit. And apparently when you cut turf, it emits carbon by all accounts. And the papers this morning are talking about turf cutting releasing carbon and other greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. You know, I know that, but I know, I understand global warming and climate change and whatever, but there was, you know, nothing like, the briquettes are fine. I don't know if you can even get briquettes. I don't know if they make them anymore. But there's nothing like a turf fire, so there isn't. There really and truly isn't. But of course, everything these days apparently is bad for you. They also talk about today and the fact that today is International Obesity Day. It's a bit of a case of mind over platter, if you like. Today's World Obesity Day. The actual statistics would absolutely shock you. 159 million children obese on the planet. 879 million adults obese on the planet. And there's a lovely paragraph in the Star this morning talking to Louise Wright. She's a psychology national lead in health in the UK. She sums it up by saying the world has changed dramatically over the past 150 years. The availability of convenience, fast food, supermarket deals such as two for ones, and all around the world, bigger portion sizes, the ease at which we can move around with cars and public transport and planes, and our work-life balance have all changed, some for the better, but unfortunately some for worse. So bigger portions, more fattening and ultra-processed food, and lack of movement by human beings. The first thing you do, the first movement when you wake up of a morning, apparently, is to reach for your mobile phone. I mean, I use the phone as an alarm in the morning, but that's it. Very handy, particularly a nice couple of extra snoozes on it. But apparently 74% of people, before they get out of bed in the morning, check their phone. We are so addicted to the smartphones that 75% of us use them the moment we wake. There's interesting stats this morning that 96% of people now, and I guess this is all over the globe, is it? Imagine it must be, now own a smartphone. 67% of people, they break it down then into the amount of times that you look at your phone on a daily basis. And apparently 67% of people wish they spent less time on their phone. I think everybody would wish they spent less time on their phone, if they're to be honest about it. The number of people who check their phone at least 50 times a day is 36%. The people who check it 100 times a day is 16%. But you have to wonder whether or not people tell the truth about the amount, or, you know, like, how do you know? Like, you don't count the amount of times you check your phone every day. I mean, I bet there's people listening to me right now would say, I know people, or maybe I'm one of them, they'd say that I check my phone 100 times a day. But there it is, nonetheless. And I love this, a couple of lovely positive stories making the papers today. One has to do with the signage of R and H Hall, the actual lettering. Now, this cherry picker's gone up now, and they'll be painstakingly and carefully demolishing the grain silos. I'm reading from an Examiner article, making way for what's going to be an incredible development down on the quays and the docks of Cork. But the sign, R and H Hall, looks like they're going to save it and try and put it to use within the new complex. Apparently, this all started with the public, many of whom have been following the demolition work closely for the silo signage to be saved and reused. And apparently, O'Callaghan Developments and O'Callaghan Properties are well up for that. They really and truly are. And finally, can I just mention for now, there is a survey out, and I suppose anybody that takes the train might be able to relate to one or more of these. But the survey from passengers and customers of Irish Rail, unfortunately, leaves a lot to be desired. I was reading this in the Examiner at the weekend, and here are a couple of the paragraphs in the article. Carriages like refrigerators, racist abuse, being forced to stand after buying a first-class ticket, being told on the tannoy to enjoy your journey on a packed train. That would wreck your head. They're just some of the complaints made to Irish Rail last year. There were 16,000 of them last year alone, up to and including all of the above, and also accessibility, including for people with disabilities. Other people stuck on trains after the doors failed to open, serious overcrowding, empty shop on board, despite the fact that there's no catering, open the shop, let us buy things, freezing temperatures on board a train. Another person actually wondering, why has the heating on trains been turned off in December when it's 0 degrees? Another family booked to first class travel, and then sadly no seats when they got in there. They were crammed into a tiny space outside a very bad smelling toilet. Nauseous the whole way home, and incredible back pain from standing. We may well come back to that one if you've thoughts on the Cork-Dublin train, or indeed even, I don't know, I mean, I don't think there'll be any complaints of the arrow going east, but certainly Cork-Dublin, a different matter entirely. Text 0868 104106. Calls on the way.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Okay, is this topic of conversation I will be dealing with on and off right across the week, so your thoughts are welcome. And on Friday, March 8th, we will have two votes, two referendums, one on family and one on care. There's two different amendments. One is called the Family Amendment and the other one is called the Care Amendment. Now, interestingly, this is just a snapshot in time, but over the weekend, we did share on my Twitter page and my X page and on Facebook as well, the following question. On the 8th of March, the people of Ireland will be asked to vote on two proposed changes to our constitution. The first referendum concerns the concept of family in the constitution. The second referendum proposes to delete an existing part of the constitution and insert new text providing a recognition for care provided by family members to each other. That was just the general gist of it. And we asked people as to how they would be voting in the upcoming referendums on Friday. I don't know whether the response on Facebook is a protest against the government, but I found it astonishing this morning when I was looking through the results of the weekend poll that we put up, and indeed many of the comments overwhelmingly no, as in people will be voting no to both of the proposed changes. So I don't know whether, you know, that, of course, this is not anything that you could stand over as being, correct in the sense of, you know, the proper protocol for doing a poll like that. But nonetheless, overwhelmingly no. So your thoughts are welcome. Text 0868104106. And just to set the scene as exactly what this is all about, Louise Crowley is the professor at the School of Law in UCC and joins me by phone. Louise, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Of course, this is, you know, when I refer to what happened online, this is not in any way 100% accurate research because it's not weighted as it should be to different age groups and demographics. But would that surprise you? No.
Yes, it does surprise me that there would be a double no on it. I mean, certainly I think people, as they learn more, their preferences seem to be shifting a bit. My own sense is that the family referendum is likely to pass. And the second one, the care referendum, I think it's in the mix.
Okay, so what are they all about? Do a Q&A with me. What's the Family Amendment about?
So the Family Amendment seeks to address what is the very limited concept of family within our constitution. So in 1937, there was inserted a new provision which provided recognition for the family in Irish society, a very laudable piece. So what it did was it acknowledged the fundamental role of the family unit within Irish society and gave it particular elevated status as a concept and one deserving of rights. However, 41.3 of the Constitution went on to say that the family is based on marriage. And so as a result, that second provision very much limited the scope of the application of this elevated status of family. So consequently, since 1937, a married family has constitutional status and recognition and associated rights under the Constitution, thereby meaning it excludes all other forms of family. So irrespective of the nature of your relationship and the duration of the relationship, the commitment that's evident, whether or not there are children, it doesn't matter. Once, if you haven't married, you are not a constitutional family in Ireland.
Okay.
So the aim of this referendum is to extend the concept of family to reflect the lived reality of Irish society, where almost half of families are not married.
Yeah, the article as it exists said the state pledges itself to guard with special care the institution of marriage on which the family is founded and to protect it against attack. So there's a line then, there's like six words will be taken out, yeah?
Family
words.
What it's doing is it's taking out upon which the family is founded. So the fact that marriage is the basis of their family, in inverted commas, their family, means that what we will do is we will remove that limiting six words, and it will just be a general recognition of the importance and status of family.
Okay. The other one is the 41.1, and again, this is related to family also. But this is where they're putting in whether founded on marriage or an other durable relationships.
Yes.
Right. And this word, yes. I've been listening and reading a lot about this word durable has really kind of upset everything, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. And unfortunately, in my opinion, as someone who has lectured in family law for over 20 years, it has been really unnecessary, all the kind of the worrying and the scaremongering, because what's happened is that we're extending beyond a marital family. So then how do you decide what a family is? In order to identify it as a constitutional family. So this is something that the European Court of Human Rights has been doing for 50 years and doing really well. This idea that we're going to give status to a relationship that is durable. Now, it will be for the courts to determine what that means, but that is very typical in terms of constitutional and family law. So what the courts will do is that if there is a relationship for consideration before it, it will examine, I suppose, the functioning of the relationship. Is it, you know, a durable, as in committed and positively functioning relationship? You know, do you have, it could be two adults, it could be two adults and children, it could be one adult and one child, and are they a family unit which supports each other and contributes positively to society?
It could be grandparents rearing grandchildren. How could it be written and changed to be kept so vague as to suggest that let's just vote yes for it and then let the courts sort it out?
Yeah, so this isn't new. I'll give you an example. So with divorce, when we introduced that in 1995, again by way of constitutional referendum, you cannot get a divorce in Ireland unless the court is satisfied that there is proper provision made for the two spouses and any dependent children. Now, proper provision is not defined in the Constitution. It's not even defined in legislation. It gives the courts discretion so that whatever case is before them, the court will make whatever orders are just in the circumstances. And they've been doing that for the last 25 years very successfully. So similarly with durable relationship, we don't have a mad liberal Supreme Court. We have quite a conservative court. And what they will do is they will examine the relationship before them and they will give due recognition to a relationship that represents that kind of committed and supportive relationship. So it's not going to go mad and, you know, and say, you know, you and your dog are a durable relationship.
Yeah.
They're going to look at the, you know, the facts before them. And if it's appropriate that there is recognition to be given, they now can. And they won't say, oh, you know, you're a woman with two children, you're not married, you have a very strong, supportive family unit. Oh, but you didn't get married, so, you know, we don't give you status. So what they're doing is they're looking at the functioning of the relationship, not form, which would be, did you walk down an aisle? Yes. Okay, yeah. You must get constitutional status. Rather, quite appropriately, they're looking at the circumstances of the relationship and giving it due recognition and weight where appropriate. But they're not going to go off and let any type of connection whatsoever be recognised as a durable relationship. That is just simply not going to happen.
Okay. See, so I did hear at the weekend say, for instance, how would you define a family and a relationship if it includes casual relationships?
So, do you mean non-committed?
Yeah.
When you say,
I mean,
casual?
Yeah. I think the point that was being made was when you marry and you go to, whether it's church or whether you do civil ceremony or whether you sign the register, or whatever, that is a serious commitment. You can't kind of just walk away from that without going through divorce or separation. Yeah.
Well, what I'd say to you is that, you know, I could get married tomorrow and walk out of the house and never see my husband again. And does that make us a durable relationship?
Yeah.
You know, realistically, we're looking at functioning and how the parties interact. And if there is that sort of, you know, dependency and commitment and support and people making decisions for the collective good rather than their own, that's a durable relationship, you know. And if you were to examine a couple, I think that if you talk about a casual relationship, there is no way the court's going to say that's durable and give it elevated constitutional status, because that's what happens. It's not that they're a marriage and they don't get the rights of married people. They just get recognition for the value of what they do as a unit. And it's sort of a respectful constitutional status. There is also a confusion that if you are a durable relationship, ergo, you get the rights of married people. Michael Matul talks about succession law and property law, and none of that is relevant because married people and their rights are separately regulated by the legislation, by the divorce legislation. So a durable relationship does not, none of those rights apply. You simply have recognised constitutional status, and it will give rise to, you know, rights, particularly in relation to maybe social welfare payments.
Mm.
We saw that with the O'Mara case and the widower's pension. That's the type of issue. It's the state's obligations to the family unit, not to each other. And I think it's been very unfortunate that has been complicated in the discussion around this. And it's really important that people recognise that there are no succession rights necessarily or other rights inter partes responsibilities and rights arising. They will be separately legislated for, and in fact, they already are for cohabiting couples. It's all already governed.
Is modernising what we call a family, and you correctly said that, is it like 50% of people now are together and in love and a unit without being married?
Yeah, I mean, people who are, you know, doing wonderful things with their family just because they're a single parent or because they're cohabiting or they're nana and the grandchild or auntie and the niece. I mean, they're being refused and denied recognition for the wonderful contributions that they bring simply because they aren't married. And we've moved a long way from that expectation that you can only truly, I suppose, reflect and represent that you love somebody or you support somebody because you got married. You know, we're living in a very different society, and unfortunately, the law hasn't caught up with it. And we owe it to all those people in positive, good relationships to give them that constitutional standing.
Why then not make the change? What protects the special status of marriage in the Irish Constitution then, if it's treated the same as durable relation? Why not? Why shouldn't the wording say that the Constitution recognises the special status of marriage in the Irish Constitution while also respecting durable relationships?
So respecting as opposed to recognising, that's a big distinction.
Well, you're the professor of law. Why not say recognising while also recognising durable relationships?
Yeah, so what they're doing is, if you look at 41.3, we said it's going to remove the six words upon which the family is founded. If you have it before you, if you take that out, it still says the state pledges to guard with special care the institution of marriage.
Oh, it does.
So the marriage is still getting its recognition in the Constitution. Nobody is deleting marriage, but what it's doing is that it's nodding and recognising all those other wonderful families.
Yeah, the state pledges itself to guard with special care the institution of marriage and to protect it against attack.
Yeah.
Exactly. Fair play to you. Fair play. The care amendment then looks at the women in the home, and that also needs modernising, right?
Oh God, yes.
So those two articles are just being completely and utterly deleted.
Well, the gendered prohibitions that underpin 41.2, which references, you know, the woman shall not be forced by economic necessity to work outside the home through the neglect of her duties. That was put in 1937, this vision of a perfect family, the ideal family, with the woman in the home who, if she had to work outside the home, was, you know, and it says it in our constitution, neglecting her duties. Now, Neil, I'm a working mother with three children, and I go to work every day.
Totally.
And I would like to think, well, my husband also, can I just say, doesn't neglect his duty. So give me a break.
Yeah.
So it's just so not acceptable. And Neil, when I speak at international conferences and I talk about our definition of the family and the unique position of the Constitution, and I mention 41.2, I really think sometimes it's the only thing they hear after 20 minutes of a presentation, because they are just sitting aghast that this is still in the Irish Constitution in 2024. You know, it's just not acceptable.
I often wondered about that article, 41.2. It says, the state shall therefore endeavour to ensure that mothers shall not be obliged by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home.
Yeah.
I often, when I used to read that, used to think, well, if you're that serious about it, you should be paying a wage
money.
Do you know what I mean?
We've tried that. I mean, that has been argued before the courts. It's also been used before we had separation for a woman to claim shared ownership in the family home because of all her domestic contributions. And it's been rejected every time. So it actually is entirely symbolic. It's, you know, the statement of the wonderful role of women in the home, but we give you nothing. So it's quite meaningless and it's very symbolic, but as a woman, it's absolutely outrageous. And so I want that symbolism to go.
But there's more to that, because the other part of the article also talks about the state recognises that by her life within the home, woman gives to the state a support without which the common good cannot be achieved. That will also go.
Yeah, so this is the sort of difficult one. This is where I have a little bit of unease. I'm still voting yes, but this is a challenge, and I'll tell you why. Unfortunately, what the government has done here, they've done us no favour. So they've conflated the two issues. On the one hand, if you want to remove this archaic reference to a woman's duties in the home, you vote yes. But in voting yes, you're also accepting this diluted version of the state's responsibility to support care in the broader sense. So the second element of it, where the state is now going to is proposing for the Constitution a broader recognition of who provides care. So they're now saying it's not just the woman in the home, and particularly the mother. Actually, care is provided by all types of people in the home, and it's provided in the home as opposed to in the home and in the community. So it falls, you know, short in a number of places. First of all, it references providing care within the home based on family bonds, and it doesn't talk about the provision of care outside the family or in the community. Secondly, it also says the state will strive to support such care. Now, strive isn't the strongest legal term in the world, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
It's hard, and I don't think it's particularly justiciable. I don't think that it would be the basis for a claim to require the state to support me providing care in the home. So the Citizens' Assembly, which was the basis for the wording of this proposal, just like marriage equality and repeal the eighth, the Citizens' Assembly comes up with the proposed wording representing the voices of the people. And they said the state, you know, they put an obligation on the state to support care. And what they've done here is they've diluted it. So it is far from ideal. But what it does do is it does a couple of positive things. If you know, if what it does is it recognises that care is being provided from by more than just the woman. So that's
yeah, it says
positive.
By members and of a family to one another
family.
Would be the wording.
Yeah, and the other thing that it does is that it puts it recognises the provision of care by individuals in the constitution for the first time. So it is now given a constitutional platform that care is provided in the home, and that the state has some kind of role in supporting it. Now, obviously, ideally, we would have preferred that to be much stronger, and there is a strong, I suppose, other view that that's not strong enough and we should reject it and say that's not enough. There's merit in that, except that I would say, you know, if we reject it, we're sticking with women in the home, but we're also then have nothing. You know, if we don't bring it in, there's no mention of care in the Constitution except that provided by the woman. And, you know, arguably, you're better having something. Now, it's diluted. I'd be the first to say it's not very strong. It's a very catch-22 situation, Neil, because it's like you accept one, the other's diluted, or you don't. You know, it's not perfect. So it's a challenging one to vote on, essentially two issues in one vote.
Yeah, but as you say, wording like mothers shall not be obliged by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home. That's very old-fashioned now, isn't it, really, when
oh,
you think
awful.
Of it?
And what does it tell the young women of this world? And what will it tell our children and our grandchildren about the position of women in the home?
Okay.
And I would just like to say on this point, Neil, you know, we know that we live and work in a society where women are endangered, where the rates of gender-based violence against women, and also pay gaps and you know, pension gaps, and all of these issues which impact upon women. You know, we're living in that society, and we're working hard to challenge those gendered issues. But if we're living in a society where the Constitution underpins and represents the values and says that a woman, you know, if she goes to work, she's neglecting her duties in the home, I think in terms of our societal values, it simply sends, you know, it compounds that issue. It compounds the marginalisation of women and the position that women find themselves in. And if we really believe in an equal society and respect for all, I think that this is a really critical issue.
Okay, so just finally then, if you look at both of them, right, this is the Care Amendment that regards women and mothers, and the other is the Family Amendment, which changes the wording of family to endurable relations, etc. Is there not a better chance, really, than the Care Amendment with regards to women, mothers should not be obliged by economic necessity to engage in labour, that there's a much better chance of that being carrying a yes vote than the Family Amendment?
Yeah, so I would think the opposite, and because I think that so many of us know and respect and love people who are in loving relationships that aren't based on marriage.
No, but my point is okay, you say the opposite. Well, the only reason I make that point is because that this vote, both of these votes, could come down to age demographics. You know, that you will have a much younger cohort voting particularly one way, whereas an older, more traditional, more set in their way voter will be slower to change one. The Family Amendment. No?
Well, I mean, they all have daughters and sons, and, you know, I think that right is on the side of the family referendum, and I think that people don't think it's appropriate that we have this such a demarcation between family and married and unmarried families. And I'm sorry that the durable relation piece has given rise to such unnecessary fear, because I'm strongly of the view, and it's very evidence-based, that this will not prove to be the challenge that I would regard the scaremongers are saying, because it simply won't be the case.
Okay.
And we know that from cases before.
Louise, thank you so much for walking through that with us. I do appreciate it. Maybe we'll have an opportunity to talk again in the future, but for now, thank you so much. Louise Crowley,
thanks,
Professor at the School of Law in UCC. I'm certainly a lot more tuned in now than perhaps I was. Maybe you are the same. If so, your thoughts are welcome. Text 0868 104 106. We got calls on the way.
Call Neil now. 0818
104 106. The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Text 0868 104 106. With regards to the care amendment, there's another word in that one, which has the word strive. And then the family amendment has the word durable relationship. I noticed that certainly there are lawyers who have come out against these amendments very much. I was reading in the Irish Times this morning also that people were talking along the lines of, say, somebody with the word strive, you know, the word strive to support people. The state recognizing that by its provision of care, members of family to one another, by reasons of the bonds that exist among themselves, give to society a support which cannot be achieved by the common good and shall strive to support such provision. The Irish Times this morning spoke with disability rights campaigners who said that this was a slap in the face for people who are looking after disabled family members or children, or indeed the carers themselves, by using a word like strive, because it's very vague, it falls very far short of, well, what exactly do you mean when you say, you know, that there will be help and that there will be support if you only strive towards it. Anyway, text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. I see a lot of texts on this, and I'll get to those as well. Mary, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
Very good. You will vote on Friday, no doubt, for both amendments?
I will.
Yeah. And how will you vote, do you mind me asking?
I am voting no to both amendments.
And why would that be?
I am, well, for a variety of reasons, Neil. First of all, the Constitution is a document that every word has to mean something. We need clarity before we go to our voting stations on Friday. And as it stands now, 53% of people, according to an Irish Times exit poll, do not know hardly anything about what they are voting for. As a single woman, the durable relationships insertion, even though the other side are trying to make out like it's really nothing to be concerned about, has a lot of people concerned. And I am also, I'm a single mother, and to think that, like, the only place that woman is mentioned in the Constitution and my recognition of what I do for my daughter as a mother would be taken out is a real slap in the face for women.
Yeah,
for
woman comes out. Yeah, for sure it does. And it's replaced by members of a family to one another by reasons of the bonds that exist among them. You know, before that change, it would have been the state recognizes that by her life within the home, woman gives to the state a support without which the common good cannot be achieved. But there's an awful lot of women would be freaking about that. You know, women in the home, the importance of them being always in the home by, you know, the fact that they shouldn't have to, by economic necessity, engage in labour. But women do engage and want to engage in labour, and they also are part of the family that gets on with rearing anyway.
Of course, and nothing. This article has never prohibited women from going out to the workplace to work if that's what they so wish. This is a choice, and it recognises that should a woman want to stay home, and that she should not be forced out to the workplace by economic necessity. And like, I mean, how is this language sexist or outdated? We're hearing this. This is a beautiful recognition of the work that all our mothers have done for us, and all the work that mothers across the country do. So why is that being taken out completely? Why could something not be put in to actually help carers? Because what is being put in will not do anything to help carers. It will simply recognise care and strive to support. It takes the government off the hook.
But look at the article as it exists, right? It says, by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home. Does that not mean that the Constitution as it stands right now says that women who have children are neglectful if they don't stay at home? Isn't that what it's saying right now?
Well, no, I don't think that's...
To the neglect of their duties in the home. Isn't the Constitution saying, duties are in the home, and if you don't stay at home, you are neglectful?
But we are made to think that our duties in the home have something to do with being chained from the sink to the cooker. That's not what it is. Our duty is to our children. Fathers also have a duty to their children. It could have been amended to include fathers, and it's funny because 69% of working women would rather be at home with their children full time than be forced out to work. That was from an Amarok survey that was done.
That's a very high figure, isn't it? I know it's a snapshot in time, but nearly 70% of women would prefer not to be working.
These surveys have been done over time, and it's because the figures don't really change. So these women would rather be... So why is the government not doing something in policy to actually help women to stay at home if that's what they so wish? Women are being forced out to work to pay for very high mortgages and an extortionate cost of living. The government could implement something in policy to help with that, but instead they want to erase women from the constitution completely. They want to do this on International Women's Day and make it sound like pro-woman. That doesn't make any sense.
But when you talk about men pulling their weight, right, and you're saying that they do, then it needs to be changed, and the change proposed then, so it's not just women who have an important role in the home, but members of a family to one another. So it kind of does help your argument in changing it to members of a family to one another. The provision of care in the home.
Of course, but you see, right now the state acknowledges that the woman actually gives something to her life at home, and it's recognised. All that hidden work that's done, anyone that's had a baby, all those hours feeding at night time, all the hidden things that we do while we're working. I had my child while I was in college. All those little things that we do that people don't see. This is the one nod from the government that is recognition for something that we do that brings about the common good for the country. Why do they want to get rid of that? Of course, something could be added in about care and to genuinely help people with disabilities, but that isn't being done.
Okay. What about the other amendment then, which would be the family amendment that changes the word family to durable relationship? Do you want to vote no on that as well?
Yeah.
Will say the state recognises the family, whether founded on marriage, so marriage is still there, you know, it's still there, or another durable relationship is inserted.
But marriage is being put on par with other durable relationships, and the government can't even tell us what durable relationships are. We know what marriage is. Like, everyone knows what marriage is.
Well, maybe durable relationships are the 50-odd percent of people who are in relationships and have never any intention of getting married.
But they could have legislated for that. Nothing is stopping the government from legislating for people that are cohabiting to have rights. They don't need to change the constitution to do that. Durable relationships, Taoiseach Leo Varadkar and Minister Roderick O'Gorman couldn't even agree on a definition that each one has a different thing to say about durable relationships. So how could people go to their voting stations and actually vote yes for something that our government can't even define?
But a family doesn't have to have children in it to be determined as a family. So you can have people in a same-sex relationship who are still a family. It's a durable relationship. There are no children. And they may never get married.
Okay, but what is a durable relationship? That it could mean anything. They're not telling people what it means. You're going to the polls.
It's everything, but not a marriage certificate. It's still love. It's still respect. It's still commitment, but it doesn't have a marriage cert.
But it could mean anything. We don't know that, and we're talking about this like marriage is a bad thing. Why was the equality referendum so important?
I don't know that it's saying that it's a bad thing. It's saying that when the constitution was written nearly 100 years ago,
actually meant something.
No, but 100 years ago there was only one game in town: marriage. 100 years later, it's not the only option anymore.
But we're talking about this like marriage isn't a good thing. Marriage is a good thing for society. Communities are built on it. Nations are formed on this is the reality. Children are more likely to like there are couples that are in relationships that are more likely to break down. This is a survey done in America. Before the child turns five, it will be likely that the parents aren't together as opposed to being married.
Yes, but American statistics wouldn't hold water here in an Irish referendum.
We're talking about marriage like it's a bad thing. So why are we putting durable relationships, which we don't know, and you don't know what it means, I don't know what it means, the government can't even define it. So why is it being inserted on an equal par with marriage?
Okay.
Why can't even tell us what it's supposed to mean before we go and vote?
Okay, keep those calls coming. Thank you so much for your contribution, Mary, and the texts as well. Text 0868 104 106. As I'm saying, we'll be dipping in and out of this across the week, because undoubtedly there won't be a single day when somebody won't be in touch with a call or a comment or a point of view. They're always welcome. Incidentally, you can always email neil@redfm.ie.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
And for the week that's in it, as we count down to Mother's Day, we've got some great prizes every single day, courtesy of ourselves and the Cork International Hotel. And we have Sunday lunch for two in the New Yorker Bar at the Cork International Hotel, followed by an overnight stay in one of their deluxe rooms. We've got one of those to give away every single day. Breakfast the following morning in the Atlantic Restaurant, and 2 hours private access to the in-house cinema to relax and enjoy a movie with whomever you choose to take with you. That's a lovely, lovely prize, and that's every single day this week, courtesy of ourselves and the Cork International Hotel. More details and everything they do at corkinternationalhotel.com. So more on that throughout the course of the morning, including your funniest, most mortifying mammy moment. A time when your mammy was incredibly funny or incredibly mortifying. So as a wide choice there, but it's all about sharing stories. So you can text 0868 104 106 on that one, or email neil@redfm.ie. And so let me just start with some of the Facebook comments from over the weekend, and there are reams and reams and reams of them, because we post the upcoming referendums online. And of course, this wouldn't be in any way scientific, to be honest with you, as in acceptable research in that regard. But certainly from what I saw with regards to those people that commented, an overwhelming no response to both amendments, certainly over the weekend. No and no. Removing both from the Constitution is giving absolutely nothing in return, only removing the recognition of women and mothers' rights. Secondly, removing family from the Constitution means any durable relationship, means any relationship with another person could have right to property or businesses. The government rushed this through. It's not proper legislation and no proper debate. Another one here. When the government are pushing for a yes while not divulging why or how it might affect people in the future, then people should always vote no. And then lots of single responses, just no and no. Another one here. It's actually sick, voting out the word woman, which is only used once in the Constitution, and doing it on International Women's Day. Another one. No and no for mothers, for women and for families. This is disgusting that we're even being made come out and vote for this. Only a woman can be a mother and a man a father. And that is also what makes a family. Man plus woman. Thankfully, I will vote no on both. And one or two more. It's an unfair referendum. People don't know enough about it. The no side has no funding for posters. The government have plenty money for posters and have also not told the truth for the agenda. They won't publish a report on this. It's all rushed, and no government minister can explain properly what a durable relationship means. They're not removing woman from the Constitution. They are replacing woman in the home with the care by members of family to one another. It's a yes for me. I'm a single mother with two sons, and in the Constitution, we're not even recognized as a family. The existing Constitution is archaic and needs to be changed to recognize all families. Like examples above are, indeed, what about men in the home? There are plenty of them also in this day and age. It will mean, if you are a male refugee in this country and your family in Somalia, the government has to pay to bring all the family to Ireland because it's part of the family unit. So vote no. These parasites of a government just want to please their bosses in European Union. That's an interesting one, actually. Like, a male refugee is not entitled to bring anybody to Ireland until they have been granted status to remain and residency. Then anybody, even now, can bring family members over. So I'm not quite sure what you mean about that. Patricia says, no and no, don't be fooled. This government have never cared about people. They want to insert the word durable relationships. That could mean anything that suits them and their agenda. There are cases waiting in the court for a man wanting to bring his many wives and his extended family here, and this wording will accelerate reunification for these cases. Wake the hell up to this stealth agenda. Leave mother and woman in our constitution. Leave them alone. And one final one for now. Don't trust the government or the media. All cheeks of the same arse. The overwhelming majority are saying no, but knowing how corrupt they are, it won't be surprising if they say yes. The yes vote won, as in. It's almost sound like Donald Trump there when you're talking about rigging an election. And then to many people at the weekend who were also texting as to why I don't share as to how I'm going to be voting on Friday, it's because I'm not allowed to share that information because of impartiality rules within the Broadcasting Act. That's just the way it is. They would be saying that I'm influencing the vote and the voters, and so that can't be done. But certainly our independent Senator Ronan Mullen in the past has never been shy to have his voice heard. Ronan, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
And for you, on either or both, how shall I vote?
Well, I've been out there saying that I would recommend a no vote to each of these proposals for various reasons. And what's interesting about this referendum, I think, is that it has brought people from a lot of differing perspectives on a range of social issues to the no side. For me, it's first of all about the way the government has handled this with, to my mind, tremendous arrogance and a degree of secrecy. You know, people get to vote yes or no in referendums, and the answer is left to the people to decide. But the contract between the people and the Oireachtas is that we should only put a question for a yes or no that has been carefully prepared and properly scrutinised. And even though we've been talking around these issues for years, what happened was that the government departed significantly from the Citizens Assembly recommendations. Then there was a Gender Equality Committee. Then the government produced its own wording that was quite different from what was recommended. They then decided not to have pre-legislative scrutiny, and that's basically before you bring the referendum bills to the Dáil and the Seanad, that you would be able to tease out the detail of what these words could mean. Earlier than that, they refused to, when they had a consultation on what the public thought about the Citizens Assembly proposal, they have still refused and continue to refuse despite being asked directly to reveal what the public said. And now, most recently, there were many, many meetings. There's 64 pages of interdepartmental meetings where they teased out with NGOs and so on, what could these words lead to? And they refused to reveal that information.
Okay.
So I regard that as pretty scandalous.
Let me just look at one of those aspects then. What did the Citizens' Assembly recommend regarding the wording that's different to the proposed changes?
Well, substantially, I suppose, the first thing was the Citizens' Assembly made an entire proposal about there being a gender equality reference in the put into the Constitution, and that proposal just disappeared, you know? That's the first thing. The second thing is the Citizens' Assembly proposal was to make the thing more gender neutral. But it's the way that the government has gone, and also to put in a reference to care. And in many ways, you see, what the government has done with each of these referendum wordings is they've come up with the wrong answer.
But hold on, hold on a second. It has made it gender neutral. It's taking out the state recognising that by her life in the home, woman gives the state support and shouldn't have to go out because of economic necessity. That takes gender out of it. The state, with the new wording, will say the state recognises that by provision of care, members of a family to one another. So there's your change. There's your gender neutral.
Oh, yeah, I'd agree with you, Neil. It's a change, but it's the wrong change. I would have thoroughly supported, and many people would have, is a reference to fathers and their parenting duties being
put in. But it could be a grandparent. It could be an aunt. It could be an uncle. It could be all family units are like, they're, no two can be the same. There's loads of different people rearing family, and some not having family at all.
I agree, but there is a value in the work that mothers do in particular, and it goes beyond care, it's parenting, and there is a value in the work that fathers do. And I think part of the agenda here is that we have a government with ideological elements within it, particularly in the Green Party, but supported now by, you know, for all sorts of pragmatic reasons by Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, who are allergic to any reference to mother, and they're getting rid of the word mother out of the constitution, and allergic indeed to any reference to father or their distinct roles. It's worth remembering, Neil, that the former Chief Justice Susan Denham said that that wording on respecting a mother's right not to be forced out of the home due to economic necessity, that she said that in no way subtracted from any role that women would have, professional or otherwise, and indeed that particular wording proved useful in supporting women's rights in a number of cases. In the Murphy case, it protected married couples' rights to equal fairness in taxation law. And in the L versus L case, it was instrumental in supporting a woman's right to alimony in the context of a separation. So this was a wording that has done some good. There was a
by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home, kind of sounds very old-fashioned to me.
Well, you know what? I would have been completely in favour of referencing fathers' and mothers' duties in the home. But you know what? There's so many people on the economic treadmill trying to get some kind of work balance in their life. There's a hell of a lot of mothers out there who are dividing time between work outside the home and work inside the home, and they would value that little bit of respect that they do have for the work they do in the home. I think we would all have supported a wording that said, let's reference both fathers and mothers and their duties in the home. But the government's whole shtick on this has been kind of to present this as some kind of outdated 1930s thing, which we have to kick as far away from the constitution as possible, when in fact it's a wording that has done some good. It just needed to be tweaked by including fathers as well. Instead, they have attacked both fathers and mothers and their distinct parenting roles. And what you said they put in exchange for it is a weak as water wording.
How is it weak as water if it says members of a family to one another? That's the catch-all, isn't it? Senator Ronan, isn't that?
Well, first of all,
covers every single type of nuance within a family unit.
You see, you can catch all and you can give nothing to any of them. And that's what they've done here. I mean, if you listen to people like Dr. Tom Clonan, my Shannon's colleague, who is a father of a person with disability, who is a doughty campaigner for people with disabilities, he has effectively described this wording as care as an insult because it gives nothing practical to carers. Compare it with what the state says, in what is said in the Constitution about the state's obligation to provide for free primary education. The words are, the state shall provide. Instead, what we get on care is this watery language of strife. And it doesn't even measure up to what was there in terms of not forcing
mothers out in the home. But have you been, talking to women at all? Women.
I talk to women mothers. All the time. And mothers all the time. And in fact, what I suspect here is, if you take out the state-funded political parties and their spokespeople campaigning for a yes, and if you take out, and we might come to this issue, the very largely state-funded NGOs, who Roderick O'Gorman, the minister, effectively threatened, by the way, they said if they described themselves as progressive and didn't support this, they'd better come out and explain themselves. He didn't say, we'll take your money off you. But there's a question hanging in the air here, that if you take out all of those state-funded quangos and these state-funded politicians, I don't know of anybody actually that's out there campaigning for a yes vote that's actually independent. But there's a hell of a lot
of women and men. Those that are campaigning for a yes vote, and that would be government led, are they using state funding for advertising and postering? And do the no get any funding at all?
Yeah, we need to be very careful here. What I have said in the Shannon is we need to investigate this issue after the referendum. I believe that these two proposals, the wording is so uncertain as to what they lead to, and we might come back to that in a minute, but that I think they can be and will be defeated on their merits. But the McKenna judgment in 1995 and subsequently the McChrystal judgment made it very, very clear that public money was not to be used in advocating one way another in a referendum. I would say that the political parties are saying we're spending the money we fundraise as opposed to that we get directly from the state to pay for these posters. But you must wonder about that, because if they're already getting state money for their other purposes, it kind of frees up their, the money they might get. But perhaps more substantially, if you have the likes of the National Women's Council of Ireland, which sounds like it's a representative body and they have, let's say, X number of representative bodies, but it's not clear that they have consulted with their bodies. It's not clear how many individual ordinary women they have in with members. It's not clear whether they've consulted them at all about this referendum wording. But what is clear is that they're getting about 95 or 96% of their staffing costs directly from the state. And if they're out then campaigning on a referendum, it makes you wonder if that is indirectly breaching the principles of the McKenna judgment, which are designed to ensure fairness in referendum.
Okay.
But certainly there's no money going to the no side that I'm aware of.
Okay, well, thank you for answering that question. Rather lengthy response, but it got there in the end.
I've got
other calls and texts that I need to get to, just on the family amendment then, because you have issues with the other, and that is taking out the word woman and not replacing it with woman and man and things like that. But what about marriage, though? We now live in a very different world 200 years ago when it said that it was the natural family as the natural primary and fundamental group in society, and that the state pledges itself to guard the special care, the institution of marriage on which the family is founded, and to protect it against attack. Not quite sure what they meant in the original constitution about protecting it against attack, but marriage now is not the only game in town anymore. In fact, you probably find more people these days in relationships that will never result in marriage.
Yeah. And, you know, the pity is that this government is either unable or doesn't want to hold two ideas in its head at the same time. And we had amendments down in the Shannon that would have made two things possible. I think the first thing that should be said is there is still a strong case to be made for promoting marriage as a stabilizing influence towards the upbringing of children. There's a huge amount of data that says marriage is a good idea. And, you know, the interesting thing is that the government isn't actually able to say anymore why it's a good idea, despite all the, you know, heaps of research that showed that it's a good idea. So it should have been possible to say, let's recognize, you know, marriage's unique role as a foundation for family life, while at the same time,
but it does
giving respect, and we have done this to families that are not based on marriage.
Yeah, but it does. The proposed change to the article pledges itself to guard with special care the institution of marriage, and to protect it against.
To be clear, they're not taking out that particular wording, but they're hollowing it out because they have left no incentive to support marriage now. And in fact, the only difference between marriage and durable relationships, and we don't know whether they could be two or three people. We don't even know, by the way, Neil, whether durable relationship covers your caller, the single parent who read in. They're kicking it up into the air for the courts to decide. There's huge amount of uncertainty. The relationship on the side, somebody said, where does a will there be a durable relationship? We don't know. For example, if somebody dies and a spouse is expecting to inherit the place, whether some durable relationship on the side that they didn't even know about, because it's now the fundamental unit group as well, that they would make.
They'd pop up from poorer people
to go to court.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So the point.
But the state pledges itself to guard and special care the institution of marriage and to protect it against attack. It's just taking out on which the family is founded. Like, there are many, many, many thousands of families in Ireland who would feel left out if that clause remains, because they're families, but there isn't a marriage.
No, because I think what they should have done is added in, and as we had proposed in a wording, to have a clause recognising non-marital families as well. But isn't it interesting, Neil, that the government isn't able to point out a single practical benefit that you actually need to change this constitution in order to get. I mean, when you saw the O'Mara case recently, where a couple hadn't been married, a cohabiting situation, when she died, he was able to get the widower's pension because he had children. I mean, the genius of our constitution is that it has been able to kind of propose
you to go to court for that, though.
Ideal. Well, actually,
you to fight for that. Yeah.
You could also legislate for
you wouldn't it, under like you wouldn't it, under the change in the constitution. He wouldn't have had to go all the way, I don't know, to the High Court.
Well, we will still have uncertainty because we don't know what durable relations means. And you know, why is it that you have people like Alan Shatter, former Justice Minister, Taoiseach, senior counsel Michael McDougall, so many lawyers saying, why would you, like, when you consider, and just to take this point, when you consider that this government has spent nearly 20 million euro of taxpayers' money putting two questions to the people that haven't been teased out, and the risk of voting yes to durable relations is that we will have many more costly court cases to tease out what this means, instead of, which they haven't done, leaving the freedom to the Oireachtas to define what a durable relationship is. So there's an arrogance and a wastefulness behind what the government has done here, and I would suspect that the cost of this is only beginning with the 20 million or so cost of holding the referendum, when you consider the uncertainty, the court cases, and I remind you again, it's poorer people who struggle to get access to law and to justice because court cases cost money.
And you're saying the reason behind this, the government said, let the courts decide, but yet people may not have the money to go to let the courts decide.
A Gary Owen kicking the ball into the air instead of teasing out this wording carefully. And again, what's the agenda behind it? Is it an unwillingness to talk about mothers and fathers? Is it an unwillingness to recommend?
But the courts, right up to the European Court of Justice, Louise Crowley, professor of law at UCC, said they've been dealing with durable relationships for over 50 years. They're well capable of doing it. This is a red herring and non-issue.
She's wrong on that. That's in a very limited circumstance. The durable relationships, if the courts are so sure. Sure, they've used it in the context of men and women rejoining each other where they move from one country to another. That's far narrower than making durable relationships.
You'd know more than a professor of law then. I mean,
my own legal background was fairly short before I went into politics, but you don't have to take it from me. Talk to Michael McDougall, senior counsel, Alan Shatter. The point is, if durable relationships is so certain, why can't she or the government come out and tell us exactly what it means?
Okay, Ronan, thank you so much as always. Perhaps we have an opportunity to talk again in the future, Independent Senator Ronan Mullen. So that's the yes side and indeed the no side for you, and undoubtedly there will be more organisations and groups coming forward. You're more than welcome. Text 0868 104 106, pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. Calls on the way.
Call Neil now, 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
And I promise I'll get more texts on the air, so keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106 to the phone lines. Hannah, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
Have you made your mind up on both? Because I still haven't made my mind up, to be honest.
I have my mind made up on one, just the family referendum. I haven't made up my mind for the other one yet.
Okay. So let's have a look at the family amendment then, which includes the issue regarding marriage, on which the family is founded. Do you mind me asking how you'd vote on that?
In our circumstances, I will be voting no. Fear of the care role.
What are your circumstances?
We have a child who's incapacitated from birth. We have another son, able, healthy son. So my fear is if this pass, and whether more further details how this will affect caring in general, my fear is my son would be in burden of caring role once my daughter turns 18, if none of the parents are capable of minding her, or if we passed away.
So if you passed away or you were incapacitated where you couldn't look after your incapacitated child, that role would be forced upon your son.
Exactly. That's my fear.
Okay. What would you think would happen if you were incapacitated or if both of you passed away?
Well, if my daughter is turned 18, I would like to think government will look after her in the ideal world.
Okay. And in residential care?
Yes.
Okay. Right. I wonder, like, can you really see that possibly happening with the wording?
No. You know, so I think it is rushed and it's very unclear how it will impact and affect the caring role. I think there should be more details and the caring role should be laid out clear how this going to affect. They should be do it in a parallel system. I think this is voting yes or no without knowing what's going to impact on families individually. It's very vague. This is my fear from my family circumstances. I respect other people have different roles.
The care recognises that by provision of care by members of a family to one another by reasons of bond, etc., gives them the support which the common good cannot be achieved and shall strive to support this provision. You think that wording is the reason that you will vote no?
Not that wording, but I think earlier when we were talking, I think you had the professor on, the law professor, when she kind of elaborated that this caring role, the family could be durable, meaning could be grandparents, could be anybody that had a relationship with the daughter. So my person that I think about right away is my son, because anyone that's caring incapacitated child, there's no other people to care for her. In fact, you lose family and friends when you're going to caring a role, you know? And
oh, no, I see the worry. No, I can see your worry. They say that the provision of care would then be by members of a family to one another, where you're saying, well, yeah, that means the state will wash their hands of looking after my child if I'm gone.
Exactly.
Okay.
And you said way better than I do.
Okay. And how are you then on the family amendment, which changes, you know, the one when you talk about the care amendment, that's the one that you're worried about, that removes mothers and women from the Constitution. Do you think that section of it, mothers shall not be obliged by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home, do you think that needs to be changed, that it's somewhat outdated?
I haven't thought about it much, to be honest, Neil. But it is audacious, yes. But again, I think it just needs to be worded better, and I think it should be inclusive to everybody, you know, and to different people's circumstances, you know.
Okay. I understand what you're saying.
I don't know the vote on that, yes. Yeah.
I haven't decided. Thank you, Neil. Thank you, Hannah. Cheers. I understand that. And this, one of the most amazing things about it is that many, many people have their own exclusively their story, if you like. And there are so many different types of stories and so many different issues regarding people exclusively theirs. Bridget, good morning.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
You said you have very clear thoughts, which means
I certainly do.
And so you mean you've made up your mind then?
Yeah, I kind of have. And I didn't even do like a deep dive. I think if you can read, you can make up your mind. I was listening. I only tuned in there for part of it. I was listening to a gentleman. I think your researcher said he was a professor or senator. And he mentioned making the wording more, say, for the second part, making it more gender neutral, equal, or whatever else. To me, that's mind-blowing, right? I have no special qualifications, but I'm also not a unique case. I'm a case as old as time. I'm a mother, okay? Yeah. And the reason that mothers got, it says, the word mothers, and you get few enough specific categories identified in the Constitution, but mothers in there, the word mother and also the recognition that they provide a common good is literally this simple. The only reason is anyone on the planet is because they landed here as babies. And the only way a baby gets here is through the body of a woman. And that doesn't take 5 seconds. And it doesn't take 5 minutes. And it doesn't take a week. It takes a minimum of, will include a bit of recovery time, right? And it includes the year, right? And that's minimum. But it takes its toll in lots of ways, okay? It takes its tax. It's the inequality that gentleman referred to, or someone said something about, oh, it's making it a bit more equal and more gender, whatever. You can't do that because no one else can do that. No one else brings people into the world. And it doesn't take 5 seconds. And it's hard to work when you're doing it. And it's hard to work when you have a new baby. And absolutely, mothers bring babies into this world and a different mother raises them. And that happens. And thank God that's there, right? But a woman, still every person on this planet was brought in, arrived here through the body of a woman, and every time a baby arrives here, mother is created. And
I don't see how that is part of the care amendment clauses, though. The state already recognizes what you're saying, I don't know how that can be improved in any way, shape, or form.
So wait, how does the state recognize it?
But what is it that you want to recognize? The exclusivity of giving birth?
Okay, but the provisions that the state provides, like maybe mat leave or whatever else, and there's a variability, right, in what in the care, in the support that women receive. But those things, they're just current government policy. They're not there, or employment legislation. They're not constitutional. They're based on this piece of constitutional legislation. That is why women receive things like maternity leave, why there are other protections there, because the lads who set that constitution up recognized that we all do different jobs, and men do women type things and women do men type things, but the one thing that no one else can do is bring children into this world, and there's a vulnerability there. It's hard to work. It's hard to, like, while during the pregnancy, after the pregnancy, and the best thing for babies is also to have their mother after they're born for a few months or a year or whatever is manageable. And that is a unique role. The inequality is not in legislation. The inequality exists in nature.
But you just,
That's just how it is, Neil.
I know that, I understand that men can't give birth. I'm not disputing any of that. Like, that's mm-hmm. common sense. But,
but
are you saying that, mothers...
protection for mothers. That's why. Because they're the only ones that can do this. It creates its own vulnerability. It takes a hell of a long time. It takes its toll on your work, your career life, your body, whatever way. I mean, it's also the most incredible thing anyone can ever do. So I'm not dishing it. I'm just saying these are the facts of it. And the constitutional lads, when they sat down and wrote that, in their wisdom thought, well, they do this for society because nobody would be here without it. So they should have a special protection.
But the constitution as it existed was almost saying that women... And this didn't even need to be a mother. It was women who got married had to be chained to the kitchen sink, because if they weren't, they were neglecting
Where does it say that? I'm the wording in front of me now. I just found it in newspaper.
Clearly it doesn't say chained to the kitchen sink, but it does say they shall not be obliged by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home. Like, does that not... That incenses... Some women.
Oh my God, I think it's a brilliant thing. Listen, I've worked full time my whole life, right? I've done piles of college and I've worked, right? And I've had four kids. That's tricky to do. I wish the state would provide more support for women to not have to go out if they don't want to, out of economic necessity. All the mums I know pretty much work, and all the mums I know are under savage economic necessity and don't get enough time at home, or they're doing all the home and all the work, etc. So this whole kitchen sink thing, they must think people are stupid. They must think we're stupid, and we don't know that literally every mother around us that we know works. And it doesn't say that. It's basically saying...
Well, it says to the neglect
a woman
of their duties in the home.
Yeah, but what it's saying is a woman can't be forced out of the home, right? Out in economic... A mother, it's not woman, it's mother. That part says mother, that a mother can't be forced out of the home out of economic necessity. And that's the basis for maternity leave. It's the basis for special protection, that you go off and have a baby, you don't come back and you didn't get the promotion, that you're protected. When you go off and do this incredible thing for society... by continuing the human race, without which there'd be nobody down here, that society recognises that. They recognise the toll on you. They recognise the time it takes.
Yeah.
They and so all
what
the,
about
all
the what about the women who are mothers who,
because of that.
What about the women who are mothers who do wish to work?
For sure, that's me. That's most of my... Well, wish, need to, who knows, Neil, you know? You start off wishing and then you're sick of it and you have to. Listen... But that's a moot point. Some donkey in the doll made this whole kitchen sink nonsense up. And all of us who worked our asses off our whole life as mothers are going, what's he talking about? Can I get one of them chains for my kitchen sink so I'm not up at 6:30 every morning? It's utter nonsense, Neil. Because we've all been able to work. Employee legislation is gender neutral. It's... except for the protections around pregnancy, which are based on this piece of legislation right here that they want to strip out. And Neil, this is really important. Here's the wording that they're taking out. Shall not be obliged, right? That mother's not being forced out of the home to work out of economic necessity, right? And it's not out of wanting to, right? Or wanting a career. Economic necessity. They can't be forced to leave their kids because they have to go out and work to try to feed their kids. Okay.
Are you saying that all women who go out to work who have children don't wish to do so?
Mm-hmm. No. Here we can't talk in alls, and we can't talk in these like two extremes, because you said it yourself. There's a spectrum of situations in Ireland, right? But the one thing that's absolutely universal to mothers is that they've had to put aside at least a year of their life to you know, grow, birth a baby, recover, you know, hopefully they got a bit more than a year. And no one else can do that. So I am not saying that every woman out there is working out of economic necessity. I think in this day and age, Neil, you and I know that an awful lot of women are, because it's tough, or there's an aspect of that for women and men. Yeah. For women and men, it's hard to pay the bills, right? But an awful lot of women, myself included, you know, worked their way up, enjoyed their career, whatever. I didn't have kids until I was in my 30s. I had a good run at it, but I had to keep working, and I know that I would have loved to take in more time. And I work now, and I would love to take more time. So both are factors, wanting to and economic necessity.
But do you accept
that? There's not a woman in the country that this legislation has prohibited from going out and getting a job, right? A poor delivering on this really good piece of legislation by our government has meant a lot of women had to go out and maybe work more hours in a week than they.
But that's why it has to be changed.
Would have been able to balance.
Because it's not reflecting.
Neil, no.
It's not reflecting reality.
It's a brilliant, tight piece of legislation, okay. And anyone who's legal will tell you that. And it's been changed for a bucket of poo-doo. Look, all the government now has to do is strive. Oh, bless them. They just have to try a bit.
What about family units or others who aren't mothers providing care by members of a family? What if it's a father or an uncle or an aunt or a grandfather or a grandmother?
Yeah, and they should absolutely
a daughter.
Yes. Here's the thing, though. They could add something, but what they're stripping out is the nonsense bit. They need to leave the mothers alone, because that role needs protecting, because it's unique. And if you want to point to an inequality, get mad at nature, because that inequality doesn't exist because of legislation. It exists because that's how babies
come
into work.
The government
could add something. Absolutely. I've an adult brother with a disability. Myself and my siblings pour care into that all the time, as does my mother in her 70s, okay? And yes, something more should be done for carers, but the state has always been able to do more for carers. They weren't blocked by legislation. They're just dangling a nonsense carrot. But here's the good news. Carers, generally speaking, are absolutely not buying it. I don't really have an opinion on the first part, more because I think anyone who can read isn't going to vote for it. You can't have something, say, be the primary and fundamental unit group of society.
Marriage.
That's undefined. No. That's undefined. So it's just a rubbish piece of legislation. And I think anyone that cares about their kids' inheritance or property isn't going to go for a wording, an undefined, anyone's guess.
The undefined is durable relationship.
I've popped up to the other one. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
You can't have something be primary and fundamental and yet be undefined.
Let me get as many calls as I can on. You didn't blab on. I'm obliged to you, and it's my job to push back, and I hope you understand that as well. Sinead, good morning.
Hi, Neil.
Aoife standing by. Go ahead. Your thoughts. How you'll vote.
Yes, I'll be voting no, without a doubt.
Well, tell me the reasons why.
Well, I just think that yet again we're faced with another referendum where the government want to delete chunks of the Constitution, and it's completely, they're going to replace it with something that is just doesn't stand up to the test, and it won't, you know, whenever people start challenging it, it's not going to do what the government or what the Constitution already gives.
But how relevant are those articles in a Constitution that was written 100 years ago, when the talk of marriage being the rock of everything, and that women or mothers in the home would be neglectful if they went to work? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Well, it doesn't say they would be neglectful if they went to work, because women have been going to work, you know, for years. There's loads of women that are out working.
The Constitution says that shall not engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home. I'm just wondering the point I'm making is how relevant is that now? It's all I'm saying.
Well, they have to, the duty from the Constitution, the way it stands, that means that the government has a duty to protect the woman's choice to stay at home and look after her family, and to focus on that without having, through economic necessity, to leave the home and go to work.
Which they never did that.
It's been mentioned.
It was always in the Constitution, but they never helped in any way, shape or form.
Yes,
and that's
exactly.
more the case now than ever before.
Be focusing. But that's where we should be focusing then, that the government needs to step up and support these women and all the other organisations that are out there that are supposed to be supporting women. Why aren't they holding the government to account on this? Do you know,
that they could be held to account on this if they don't get rid of that article. That they could be, you think they'd be called out on it before now, but I know what you mean, that really...
Yeah, but they should be, and this deleting this amendment or this article out of the Constitution will let them off the hook. It won't do anything to help women or mothers or carers. What they suggest to replace it with, it's no good. There was different cases before the Supreme Court, and Chief Justice Murray said back in 2002 that the Constitution needs to be interpreted as a contemporary document. So that doesn't matter how many years ago it is. It is to be applied as a contemporary document, and that the duty and obligations of spouses are mutual. So that it's not this sexist thing that the government are trying to say it is, and that it's not, outdated or archaic.
But just look at that. Is it sexist? And in what ways is it sexist? Is it sexist to say that it's women have the only role in the home, or is it sexist to say that men actually are part of the rearing also? Which?
It doesn't say that women are the only ones in the home, but... Time and again, research has shown over the years that women would choose to do that, to stay at home. They prefer to be the ones that are at home rather than having to go out and work. And time and again, women are having to make that choice and having to go out to work because they don't have the choice, because the choice is not there for them because of economic necessity, because of the housing crisis, and because of the rising cost of living.
Yeah, it is economic necessity.
It's the government are failing. And they're not looking after the members of the state who they're elected to look after.
And just quickly on the changes, although it doesn't take marriage out of the Constitution, marriage has to share it with durable relationship. Is that a no as well?
Yes.
Okay.
For me, yes, I'd be voting no on that as well. Because, again, it's not adding in. There's too much... unknown with this durable relations. There was other cases before, and that the judges have said that durable relations is impossible to define. What they're trying to put in and say in this durable relations, they're not giving anything to anybody else that they don't already have. They're not giving anybody anything else. They said that
in the sense that maybe one in two people don't get married, but they are in a long-term relationship, so then they have to change it so it's not exclusively marriage anymore in the Constitution. Would that make sense?
But they don't have to delete. They don't have to delete.
Which?
They don't have to delete what's already there. What's already there is good.
But they're not deleting it as such. They say the state pledges itself to guard with special care the institution of marriage and to protect it from against attack.
Yes. But that can be amended to include other relations. They should, that marriage is... there's been other research that shows that marriage is the cornerstone. It's a great good for society, and that it's undermined by what the government are suggesting is put in.
But the existing constitution says that marriage is what the family is founded on. That's not relevant really to many, many people anymore.
Still to people. It still is relevant to a lot of people.
But not to
a lot.
The world of 100 years ago. I'm only suggesting.
I know, but it hasn't. There are still a lot of people that is relevant to. And yes, there are other types of families, but that shouldn't, we can legislate to protect those people. We don't have to delete chunks of the Constitution.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Judges have said that, it can be used and applied to today. in situations without these changes being made.
Okay, thank you so much for that, Sinead. An awful lot of people actually this morning, and that's just the way it goes, are voting no, not just on one, but indeed on both. Text 0868 104 106.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
And by text 0868 104 106. On the referendum, will the mother still be entitled to her mat leave, seeing as they want the term mother removed? That's an interesting text. Obviously, the answer to that is yes. If it's a no vote, there will probably be another referendum like Lisbon. If it doesn't suit, they'll vote again. I'd also like to say well done to Mary Foley from Pembroke Woods and Passage West on her community awards. As Frick, so say all of us. I'll be voting no and no. They're trying to get the work of the mother out of the constitution. Also, we all know the law is an ass. This is a complete waste of money to get attention away from what really matters. Regarding a durable relationship, if I'm married and my husband had, say, a long-term affair and I didn't know about it and he died, is his affair partner entitled to half of his stuff under durable relationship? I suppose that's one of the questions that would be argued out in court, isn't it? On International Women's Day, the same day as the referendum, they're taking the total beeswax out of us women. Stop the madness. They want our rights totally gone. That's fact at the end of the day. Get real people. Mother's Day comes shortly after the referendum, which now wants to remove any reference to mothers and women from the Constitution. What an occasion to celebrate motherhood. Thanks so much to the lady from UCC for explaining it properly. She made a lot of sense. Morning, if I'm Muslim and have three wives, are they all durable relationships? I'm seeing a lot about this topic lately. Yes, relationships, inheritance, issues like that. I don't know what the story would be regarding polygamy, but I do see an awful lot of people talking about the polygamy aspect regarding our changes to the Constitution. If I'm in a relationship and a widow, can they now take my children's inheritance and will they have rights? Inheritance from your late husband? I would have thought absolutely not. But again, that's just the thought. She doesn't know what the courts are going to say. That's crazy stuff. If you rang an ambulance, this is to do with durable relationships and strive. If you rang an ambulance and they said that they will strive to get an ambulance to you, don't tell me that you wouldn't be worried. Just one or two more. I can't come on air, but can you highlight the fact that if we say yes to the family vote, we're opening the gates to even more refugees coming in, because the ones that are here will say that their brother, their sister, their family, etc. need to come. We can't cope the way it is already. Durable relationship is open to a vast array of interpretations. Interview Michael McDougall. He says facts, says Joe. I will, and I certainly will be doing that. I'm not sure when, but certainly the time that suits Michael McDougall, but we have been in touch, and as soon as I can get a time that works, then he will be on air. Keep him coming. Text 0868 104 106. Back after 11.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
And it's quite interesting for the week that's in it to be using the word mother, because we're counting down also to next weekend and Mother's Day. So we have some wonderful prizes to give away, courtesy of ourselves in the Cork International Hotel. They've got lots to offer right across the spring, including family date nights, delicious Sunday lunches. Treat your mammy to that special someone gorgeous overnight win. That's what we're doing every day this week. Sunday lunch for two in the New Yorker Bar at the Cork International Hotel. Overnight stay in a deluxe room. Breakfast the following morning in the Atlantic Restaurant. And 2 hours private access to their in-house cinema to relax and enjoy a movie with your loved one. So that's for mammy. Yourself and your mammy might even go. Who's to know? But there are the prizes right across this week. And you need to tell us your funniest, your most mortifying mammy story or mammy moment, or something that we'll find interesting or funny or mortifying or shocking or horrifying. All to do with your mammies. The best stories win every day. And I'll do some more of this a little later on this morning. But text 0868 104 106. Also pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. Huge response this morning, and it's only Monday morning, to the upcoming referenda. There are two of them. One is the family amendment and the other is the care amendment. And I'm getting fairly crucified this morning, and I can understand why, from people who are texting, listening to our conversations and my line of questioning. Can I just say, with those of you saying that I cross-examine, I don't listen, that's fair enough criticism if it were balanced. But this morning, the vast majority, I think pretty much almost every single call so far, has been from people who are going to vote no and no. And it is my job to push back, rather than sit here and agree with every single thing that's said on the air. It is my job to cross-examine, for want of a better word, or to push back, or to challenge. So that's all this is. If I had loads and loads of people who are coming on saying they're going to vote yes and yes, then I'd also be doing the very same thing. That's my job. So I'm just holding my hands up and saying, I just want you to appreciate that, given the text and the terms of reference, when most of the people getting in touch are going to vote no. But anyway, to the phone lines we go. I'm just passing that on for what it's worth. I don't mind. I don't mind at all. I'm just doing my job as best I can. Aoife, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
Having said that, you say my interpretations are very wrong and extremely offensive. Please explain.
Well, what you did say there, and you said it quite clearly, was that a woman's place was in the home, chained into her kitchen. Isn't that what you said? Is that how you interpreted it, Niall?
Are you saying that that's what I believe?
No, I'm not. No, but that's what you did say. And that's what made me text in to you, because I, as a mother in the home, I would love to spend all day changed to my kitchen sink. I haven't got that luxury. I'm extremely busy. I'm very seldom in my home. For a stay-at-home mother, I'm on the road all the time meeting my children's demands. And that's why I'm going to be voting no anyway in this upcoming referendum. In both referenda, I'd be voting no.
I hope for a moment you don't think that that would be my understanding of what women should do, as in stay at home, chained to the kitchen sink. I'm saying that the wording as it stands would seem to be very much out of date with society we're living in now, in which the family is founded, protected against attack, that marriage is the only institution in town, and that mothers, you know, should not be obliged out of necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home. When there are many women who are working, now I understand that for an awful lot, it's out of absolute necessity. But is this the modern society that we want people to, our sons and our daughters, to be brought up in? That's all I'm asking. I'm only challenging, that's all.
I understand that completely. No, this is something that we should be striving towards, Neil. We should be striving towards a healthy society, a content society, and relieve as much stress and burden from families as possible. And that's what this article says in 41.1 and 41.2. There's not putting anybody out by having this article there. In fact, what it does, it just reiterates that commonly and normally it would be the woman in the home that's going to be at home.
I heard at the weekend many saying that even that is changing, and it's insulting not to recognise that in some cases it's the man is in the home.
Yes, that is the case. I think it's in 20,000 men or something choose now.
Okay,
but still, 250,000, that's a quarter of a million women are represented in that article and acknowledged in that article. And to delete that is to delete their acknowledgement and delete their represented, how they are represented in our Irish Constitution. It's a very small article, but it does hold a lot of weight. It does hold. It gives me acknowledgement. It says I have a right. Now I'm not going to say we don't have a very nice lifestyle at home. You know, we live a very humble life here. I've got 9 children. My youngest is just born at Christmas. My eldest is 19. You know, we work very hard. My husband works really hard, and he has done.
Well, you would have to with 9 children, wouldn't you? Because the demands on the family budget
must
be enormous.
Well, you would. But I could very easily as well, Niall, say that I am being forced out of the home. This isn't the first attack on motherhood as well. We might remember that Charlie McCreevy brought in tax individualisation there. You know, not that long ago, which was the first attack on single income households.
That's interesting. That's the first time I've heard that this morning, an attack on motherhood.
It isn't an attack on motherhood, an attack on single income households, if you don't want to put it just on mothers, if you want to say it's for fathers as well. This is attacking, that was the first attack on a single income household.
But did that part of the Constitution ever kind of in any way make you uncomfortable, where it said the state shall therefore endeavour to ensure that mothers shall not be obliged by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home? You never found that in any way condescending or a put down or
No. I really find that motherhood is superior to all other jobs. It's a massive job and a massive undertaking and something that we don't go into very lightly. And when I got married to my husband, it was a huge big deal. You know, it was an issue. I was pregnant with our eldest child, and it wasn't something we took very lightly. You know, we couldn't afford to keep me at home. So what we did, we had to do massive cutbacks. We got rid of our house and we've been renting ever since. Now it's a huge sacrifice. We'll never have our own home, I don't think, Niall, at this stage. You know, my husband has never been out of employment. He has a governmental job. He's senior in his governmental job. Mm. And we can't get a mortgage because we're a single income household with a large family.
Mm.
Now, so I could easily stand back and say, okay, well, this hasn't represented me because it is going to force me out. If I went out and I got a little part-time job, we'd have a mortgage, no problem.
Well, that did concern me, that these words that were originally written, possibly written with the best intentions of the time, didn't actually deliver on the promise in any way, shape or form.
They certainly didn't, saying that
a mother shall not be obliged by economic, et cetera, et cetera. They were just words, really, empty words.
Well, I'm sure at the time they weren't empty words because my father had a very humble job and my mother has a lovely home in Drumcondra. Do you know that I would love to live beside her and be able to support her in her old age now?
But they will ensure that mothers shall not, etc., etc. But they never did ensure, because here we are in 2024 out of economic necessity and absolute financial need having to go to work.
Yes, and I agree with you completely. So then what we have to do is get them to withhold that. We need to put that to the government and say, hold on a second, I didn't realise, and an awful lot of people didn't even realise this article was in the Constitution until very recently. And now they're up in arms saying, hold on a second, we were always protected and we were never offered anything. In fact, they took more from us when Charlie McCreevy introduced that tax individualisation against single income households. So it was very anti-family, very anti-mother since then. Now, what they could do is they could uphold that and they could, you know, bring that to light and say, OK, well, we need to do more for families. But instead, we're going to let them completely off the hook, delete it. Let's get rid of it.
Just very briefly, Aoife, because of time constraints, where are you then with the family amendment that changes, I suppose, the fundamental unit up until now being primarily marriage?
Well, I think now, like all of you, first of all, I want to say how happy I am that the majority of your callers and your speakers have been noticed. It's very reassuring for me because I didn't realise that we were so vocal about this. I haven't been out. I'm sure you can appreciate it. I'm very busy at home, so I don't get to speak that much.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It is interesting, and I'm delighted to hear that. But if you look at durable relationship, what is a durable relationship? I know I'm repeating what all of your previous speakers have been saying, but I have friends who are cohabiting. They've chosen to cohabit because they don't want to be in a committed lifelong relationship. They don't want that piece of paper that defines them as a married couple. They've chose not to be, not to marry in even a civil registry office or a civil. They've chosen all of that because they don't want that.
Mm.
Now, where do they stand? They're being forced into this durable relationship, something that they never signed up to and something that they never consented to.
But you know, Aoife, that's not actually 100% true, because the change would say that the state recognises the family, whether founded on marriage or other durable relationships.
Or a durable relationship. But what's this durable relationship? You're either a marriage or you're in a durable relationship. What happened to the single person who chose and is quite content and happy to be single in her family home or his family home with the children? They never signed up to it. They don't want to be married. They chose to cohabit. Are they now in a durable relationship?
They are, yes.
Now their legal term. But they never consented to that. They don't want to be in a durable relationship. They want to be a cohabiting couple with freedom to come and go as they please. You know, if please God, they will stay together for the sake of their family mortgage and everything else. But they never signed up to be in this institution. They never signed up. They never asked to be in a durable relationship. And now they've been lumped into this little pocket here now of you're equal to marriage. They didn't want that. They didn't want to be equal to marriage. They wanted to cohabit. If they wanted to be equal to marriage, they would have gotten married. If they wanted to be in a civil partnership or...
And what would be the unintended consequences of the wording durable relationship? Is it that it would have to be decided by the courts?
The legality?
Yeah.
See, everything, you can't say that. You can't put something before them and then say, oh, well, we'll decide that later. We're not voting on something that they're going to decide later in the courts. What we're voting is to remove something that works very well and is written in stone and gives acknowledgement and recognition to families, marriage, mothers and children and all these, you know, units that we strive to work towards for the better of society. Mm. Removing that.
Okay.
There's no need to remove it. We don't only there's no need to remove it, but we're spending 20 million euro to remove it, which is bonkers. At a time where people are struggling, I have a child, you know, with scoliosis, I have a child with severe allergies, you know, I'm not complaining about them, they're blessings, and I don't look for handouts for anybody. But we don't, when you look at the waiting list and where that money could be spent, and then to throw it away, it's actually a terrible insult to every man, woman and child that pays taxes, every child that's paying their 15 cents tax on these ridiculous new plastic bottles, and every woman that buys a pair of shoes for a child, you know, stay-at-home mother, every man that works, every God-given hour to provide for his family, everybody is being affected by this because it's our taxes that are spending 20 million euro on this ridiculous nonsensical amendment that there is no need for and that won't change anything.
Okay, appreciate that as always. Thank you, Aoife. Trying to cover as much ground as I can, and right across the week your calls are welcome on this one, so get involved in the conversation. Text 0868 104 106, email neil@redfm.ie, pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. I have to say, I'll do another couple actually, but on the basis of this morning anyway, it's very interesting, overwhelmingly no. Now that may change across the week, but I'm open to all calls. That's for sure.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Get involved in the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. By and large, the overwhelming amount of calls this morning have also been females, so it's good to get the balance right. So men, get involved. Text 0868 104 106 because we have a role to play as well. Can I just say, I'm going to go take some more calls in a couple of seconds, but the issue, and I think Jim Ahern wants to jump in on the word durable as well. He's actually in Delaney's Bar in Hong Kong, where everybody in the pub apparently is listening to us this morning. There's an entirely different story in that alone. So good morning, Jim.
Hey, how are you, boy?
Delaney's Bar in Hong Kong. What's going on?
Yes, there's only one Irish bar I can find in this side of the island, so unless I get the ferry tomorrow to the other side and find the other two, I'm going to have to drink there. But
right.
Okay. Yeah, we're all talking about this issue in Ireland here, and well done to your last caller there. I mean, she said everything, Neil. You know, Manana here, if you want to define one of them, that's who she was, a mother, a girl who knows who she is, what she's done, she's raising children. You know, what she didn't bring up was, since 1922, after the Constitution was written, the state has ignored women. You know, they really, you know, it was all about they're just there, you know, and I have a bigger problem with that. That we never, and the government certainly didn't recognise the women of Ireland. We have an opportunity now for the women of Ireland to speak up and vote no, because I'm up for every woman, vote no is the answer. I believe the people that wrote this have a backup plan, which they'll roll out now after we vote no. But I think the women of Ireland should say...
What is that plan if there's an overwhelming vote no? Is it to just, we'll do all this all over again, is the plan?
What is going to happen again? Since this lease, it was a Nice or whatever we were in the last time, the Lisbon Treaty, and we got that wrong as well. But like, for the women of Ireland, this is a very, very important vote. The reason there was no speak of this up to this morning, you know, you drive along the roads of Cork, all you had was 5 or 6 yes posters up. So I don't even know if there's no poster up. They're probably all in Dublin.
Well, that probably has to do with finances and funding more than anything else, I would think. Well, and that in itself would make it somewhat unfair, wouldn't it?
Well, it is unfair for the government not to fund a no vote because look, they done this on Women's Day, and they you know, if you want people not to vote, you make no interest in this. No interest means people won't have an interest in going voting.
But why do you want things? Why do you want things just left alone?
Well, I think until we know where they're going, you can add to the, you can make a new constitution. Peace. You don't have to remove any constitution section from our constitution rights in Ireland. You can add something to the constitution, but why you remove where somebody 100 years ago decided that the woman of Ireland, I'm not really the woman of Cork, was a very important piece of our community, which we've abandoned and we took for granted for years. And now all of a sudden somebody decides, let's readdress this and let's dump that. I think we should apologise. And I'll emphasise that. Apologise to the mothers or grandparents.
Mm-hmm. Why?
And every woman
why,
in this country.
Yeah, no, I'm interested in where you're going. Apologise for what? For saying in the original constitution that they will be, that they shall endeavour to ensure that mothers shall not be obliged, but actually doing nothing about the fact that they were saying that they shouldn't have to go out to work for economic necessity, and they should have what? Paid them?
Exactly. We've ignored. We have made it financially crippling to generations of women in this country. And how dare the government, at this time decide that with one whiff of a constitution that they can just disrespectfully ignore what they've done to the women of Ireland. How dare they? And how dare the woman that's written this constitution piece that thinks she can push down this, down the throats of the women just because one is a home or one is a beautiful job in a bank, but the woman in Knocknaheeny or in Mahon is raising a child, a beautiful child, and then the rest of the women can't even afford a child because the government decides it's easier to give out a bloody condom and kill the new generation then pick up the pieces of our generation and leave it exist. How dare they?
Yeah, the state does though need to recognise, doesn't it, that the family unit and the provision of care is not exclusively women or mothers alone anymore, no?
But absolutely, you can make a new constitution to recognise anything that Baraka and your people decide they need to bring into our
without
society.
Without taking mothers from.
I'm very welcoming to everything in our society, everything. I'm not negative to anything. You can be black, brown, pink. You can come from Black Rock or Blackpool. I don't care.
Are you the same? But are you the same?
Why would you rape and pull out a piece of our constitution that is protecting a woman that the government hasn't protected, hasn't even recognised for 100 years? Does women have raised children in this country starved? They've done without dinners to feed their children. And our government in one whip decides, we'll change it now, and if it's changed, we're equal, or we can just...
And where are you with regards to durable relationships being inserted alongside marriage, where it would have been fundamentally the natural, primary and exclusive unit, well, they say fundamental unit of our society, was marriage in the Constitution. Are you okay with that change?
Neil, you can add anything you want, but take nothing out. Let's deal with the out after you put something in. I don't even understand why we're doing both in one. If you want to bring in another juror relationship, whether it's two guys on their own, three guys on their own, one guy with three women, bring that in separately, but make it very obvious to everybody where it's going. At the moment, we have an open-ended constitutional phrasing that it can be adapted in so many ways.
Okay.
If I said to you, the dog walks down the street, right?
Yeah.
You can understand that the dog walked down the street. Now, you look at what the government are bringing into the Constitution. It's open-ended. There's no dog. The dog has loads of street to go down.
This
is coming from...
I did look at the word durable. I know you're breaking up there, and that seems to be the word durable seems to be causing an awful lot of derision, doesn't it? As to what a durable relationship is. I know that shoes can be durable. I know that plates can be durable, engines can be durable, but relationships now, the definition of the word durable is able to withstand wear, pressure or damage. It's not the best word, and it's something that is durable, is strong and lasts a long time without breaking. It's probably a better description of durable when it comes to a relationship, isn't it? Strong, lasts a long time without breaking.
Need to give an image to the rest of the Cork, though. The word durable, right, is something that they use in a bunny in a battery for Christmas, right?
Durable, yeah.
And that dies as well, or goes dead, right?
Okay.
So, come on. You're talking about the best minds in the country have put together a couple of lines for us all to vote on, and they got it wrong.
All right.
And I can guarantee you, they've wronged two already. It's ready to go, right? Let's hear what round two is now. Well, get me one politician. I spoke to a politician in the English market 2 days ago, 3 days ago, right? And I asked him, did he understand what we're voting? And he said no. And he said he can't. He said it doesn't make sense to him.
I have.
That was a politician. We were sat across from Friday.
I have a plan on that as we head through the week to talk with the likes of Simon Coveney, with Michael McGrath and others. Unfortunately, I had also wanted to talk to Holly Cairns, but bizarrely, they have declined to even come on the air and talk about it, which I thought was kind of strange. You would think it would be an opportunity she'd love to take.
Hang on a second. They're all running for groans, right? They don't want to be caught on the wrong side of a wrong boat. They know it's wrong. They're all diving down.
I know, and they're entitled not to come on the air. I just thought that Holly would use the opportunity to have her voice heard with regards to the New Ireland, that everybody is endeavouring to move towards, you know? And it's just, I thought it was surprising.
I'm in for the New Ireland. You're in for the New Ireland. But I'm also backing up a woman. Watch this. My thing is very simple here. We've ignored women for 100 years. The government has got away with it. They got away with it hands over heels, right? And if we vote yes on this, we just signed off that, yes, you're wrong. The government have been so wrong for 100 years ignoring women. Women raised 9 children, 7 children. I grew up in Lean Healy Road. You couldn't walk down the road to the kids that were there. There's nobody having kids anymore, so you can run there now, but...
That's not altogether true. Just spoke to a woman with 9 kids. All right, okay.
And let's mind the women, and let's get it right.
Okay, thanks, Jim. As always, we got calls from four corners of the globe. This morning, Jim is in Delaney's Bar in Hong Kong. Text 0868 104 106.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
And more, of course, on this topic throughout the course of the week, so get your voice heard, please do. You were talking earlier on this morning about turf and turf cutting, and that way too much of it have been cut, they're saying, and it's impacting global warming and climate change and carbon emissions and stuff like that, turf. I saw an amazing thing yesterday, and I'm sure that somebody could explain to me what in the name of God I was looking at. I was on a beach, big, huge, open, wide beach, beautiful day, and down the beach comes a tractor with one of those big, huge buckets on it. You know, the front bucket that can use with the teeth on it and everything? And down the sand and down the strand it went, over to the sand dunes, and then he starts, inside in the tractor, starts attacking and smashing the sand dune, right? I didn't know I was going to. I thought it was the county council doing something with regards to drainage. But it didn't look like that. He was smashing into the sand dune with the bucket of the tractor, filling it up with sand. And when it was all full, having smashed in and smashing a lot of the reeds and the pampas grasses and everything of the sand dune, and taken a huge big bucket load of sand, and off he went with it. I mean, is that like somebody using it for, to fertilize the land or something, for sand in the land or what? It clearly looked all wrong to me. Does anybody know if this is happening wholesale? It's just something that I noticed yesterday. I was wondering what the reason was as to whether it was even legal or not. I'm sure that some of you guys know what was going on. Text 0868 104 106. Talking about things going on, you'll recall on Friday's programme we tried and we tried and we tried as best we could for Ivor, who found himself with cancer and a lot of really, really serious health issues. And even though he's been trying and trying and trying, having had 9 months' notice, he's had to leave his home. He's got a rare cancer. The bone marrow requires him to be in very warm temperatures. Remember that call yesterday? But he had been in and out to the county council in Mallow saying, look, I'm going to lose my home. And they were saying, don't worry about anything. On the day that it happens, come in and we'll be able to help you out. Well, he did all of that on Friday and nothing was happening. And they were told, sorry, we have nothing for you, etc., etc. We got lots of people working on his behalf, and if you were listening on Friday, you will have heard all of those. And I don't really have time right now to go through all of that again. But we did an awful lot of work. Now, you don't have to delete it. It's just I won't have time to read it all right now. But I'm just curious as to what actually happened regarding Ivor after we came off the air on Friday and spent another hour or two trying to help him out. And he joins me again by phone. So, Ivor, good morning. My apologies, line one. There you go. Ivor, any update? What happened across Friday afternoon? What happened with you?
Yes, I was repeatedly in the council offices and I got an offer to stay in emergency accommodation for time being. So thanks to council, I have some roof and place to stay and big thank you to Springford Hall Hotel in Mallow. whose stuff were really accommodating.
And they are. I've heard that numerous
times.
They
provided me with extra heating that I needed. And my son, who was supposed to stay over weekend with me as well, council said that there is no options for anyone else to stay with me. However, with the so short notice, and there was no for me at any option left to arrange some other stay for him.
Okay, so he didn't stay with you at the weekend.
His mother had different plans which could not be changed.
But
the hotel was really good at it. They allowed to stay him with me, so he was staying with me on the weekend as well. So
oh, he did.
Okay.
This is far from ideal for you, but you're in a much better position than you were 10 o'clock last Friday morning when I first brought you on the air. How were they able to find something for you in Springford Hall Hotel when they weren't able to find it at 10 o'clock on Friday morning?
Well, I don't know how council internally works. It's their work. And whatever way it was done, I still have to thank them because it was done and sorted for me.
So it is, and I'm glad for that. But it takes pressure, doesn't it? It really and truly does. They're found wanting. You put pressure on them. You force them to do right, and they do. It shouldn't have to be that difficult, though.
It doesn't have to be. I agree with you, and I agree as well. It's not. Sometimes it's not enough with a single pressure. When single effort fails, then I have to thank you as well for coming in and helping with that.
And I'm happy to have.
When community is helping, can make a difference.
It shouldn't have to be that way, though, but time and time again it is. So for how long will you be able to stay there?
Well, I don't know, but I hope so. I will be able to stay there until something more permanent is sorted for me.
Okay. Well, will you stay in touch? It's not as if we haven't been trying on your behalf for a more long-term solution for you, but I'm glad in the interim that you weren't sleeping in your car Friday night, okay?
Oh, yes. That's really big relief.
Okay. Absolutely. And you're warm and you're safe. And hopefully things will go from good to better. But at least you've got a roof over your head. And you are right. The staff and the owners of Springford Hall are lovely, lovely people. And I'm glad that you've got a roof over your head. Ivor, thank you so much. Stay in touch, all right?
All right. Thank you, Neil.
Mind yourself. Take care. Text 0868 104 106. Back after the break. Lots to do and limited time.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
These are very funny with regards to Mother's Day on Sunday and the mortifying things your mom has done. Whenever I was in the car with my mom years ago, if we passed a group of young fellas, she'd roll down the window every time and shout out to them, "Hey, I have a lovely daughter here for you." She was trying that hard to get rid of me. Now, that is what I call mortifying. Another one here. I brought my mother into the labour ward with me on my first daughter, her first grandchild. She had the place upside down. She was convinced she was the one in labour. The nurse was telling me how to breathe. She was the one doing the breathing exercises. I asked her to prop me up with the pillows. She was pressing the buttons, sending me back and forth in the bed like a madwoman. To top it all off, at one stage, the nurse was asking her to cool me down with a wet face cloth and swab my lips with water. I was red in the face and dehydrated at the time. My mother sat back on the chair, put the face cloth on her head, swabbing her own lips, saying, "It's very warm, all right." The nurses were roaring laughing, and she was asking them to check her temperature because she felt weak. Oh my God, I don't know. Where's the, I have this kind of vivid imagination. I can see everything happening there inside the labour ward with your mother. That's like something out of Fawlty Towers, isn't it? Anyway, Tina, good morning.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
I'm good. What have you got for me?
I'm diddling away there listening to you.
Oh, Jesus. Imagine the mother inside and the face cloth. Kind of, you know, like swooning in the chair. But anyway, for the time that's in it, give me your story. Go on.
Oh, Neil, it's going back a couple of years now because my mother, God rest her soul, she's no longer with us. But going back, I'd say it was a good 20 years ago. First of all, my mum was widowed very young. My father died in 82 and he left her with 7 children under the age of 12.
How old were you?
So I was the middle child. So there was 12, like there would have been 10, okay. 9. I think I was 7 okay, and then the twins middle. Were 4
right.
And my sister was 2. So a long story short, Neil, anyway, she was after getting caught to be one of the jury. And she used to go outside the door, as I said. She had a phobia of dogs. She was just, you know, she was like a prisoner in her own home, to be honest, and never turned up to the court. So a couple of weeks later, she was summoned for not turning up. And she was in an awful state. She had to go to the doctor to get some relaxers before she went in because she was saying... I said, ma'am, you have to go in. You're literally going to get into the height of trouble. It'll probably be a fine explain to the judge. So,
in we went. Explain to the judge what, though? I haven't been out of the house in 20 years because I'm afraid of dogs.
Yeah. Yes, honestly, to God. Now, the poor woman used to get taxis to wait to the shopping centre to do her shopping. None of us drove, obviously, at the time. So, in we went anyway, and there was a couple now before her that we said it was 4 or 5 that hadn't turned up, and the judge was, you know, €50 fine, €20 fine, and they were giving their explanation. So it came to my poor mother, and she was, I tell you, Nolan, I'm not joking, she's not 5 feet, she was tiny, and she was probably about 6 stone in weight, if you could just picture her, and she had the tissue in her hands, and she's rambling with the tissue, and next the judge says, right, Mrs. Ryan, so you can tell me, why didn't you turn up? She says, well, doctor, I'm a widow with 7 kids. She kept calling the judge doctor. The more she called him doctor, the more I wet myself. I couldn't breathe. I'm laughing. And the judge, he just took one look around. I swear to God, hand my heart. And he says to her, go on away home, missus. If I had 7 children to rear alone, I'd forget 2. And she's the only one that got no fun.
How long ago was that?
Oh, God, Neil, she's dead 12 years now.
Oh, so God, that's
probably about 20 years ago. Oh, it was a long time, but I still remember it like yesterday.
Did she think she was going to go to jail or something?
She, do you know, she had, I suppose she wasn't used to people because she used to go outside the door.
So like, she literally didn't go out at all. Was it because of a fear of dogs?
She had back in, I'd say when my twin sisters were in the buggy, I think my other sister came on and told you this again a long, long time ago, but she was, a husky chased her down in Blackpool.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that,
and
yeah.
This was a long time ago, because I always remember again, one Mother's Day going back years ago, she was actually deceased, and my sister rang in to explain, you sent her a bunch of flowers, and she was telling everyone, Neil Prendeville gave me them.
Fair play, well I'm delighted I did.
No, Neil, years
I'm
ago,
delighted,
you know?
When she was still with us, yeah. But like she actually...
Every morning.
Fair play. So she actually didn't go out because of the fear of dogs. I mean, like she didn't...
She had bad experience.
And or was it that she'd have to go from the front door to a taxi or from the front door to a car?
Literally, she had family in Ballyvihan, and it was the same when we didn't drive. It was taxis everywhere until we came old enough to, get on the road. She never put her foot outside the door, the poor creator, when I think back, you know, and reared us all very, very well.
Oh, man, that's a great story. Thanks, so, Tina. Thanks for reminding
me. Memories when I heard you. I said, I have to tell him about my poor mother.
Yeah, I'd say there's a lot more stories in her. I'd say, hold on. Anyway, listen, Tina, stay listening. We'll see how we get on. Tara, good morning. Hang on a second, let me get myself sorted. There you are, Tara. So this is when you were 18 years old, was that right? So this is a story regarding your mam, though. So did she go somewhere with you on that day?
Yeah, so I had the fear of going anywhere on my own, so I had to bring my mom with me. And I went into the old social welfare office down by Hanover Street, I think it is.
Yeah.
And we were in the cubicle, the boot, just waiting to be seen. And the woman had gone away, and we were inside, and my mum was like, I have to fart. And I looked at her and I said, don't fart, because it's probably going to be louder, it's going to smell. And she was like, I won't, I'll do a silent one. And I was like, don't, please. But anyway, she left one, and it was like really loud, and it echoed off every corner of the wall, the glass door and everything. And she opened the door and she closed it, and I tried to get out and she wouldn't let me out, so I was locked in the door with a smell lingering and everybody looking at me thinking it was me that farted in the boot. And then I turned around and the woman was there looking at me in disgust. So safe to say, my mom was bursting her butt off, and luckily my dad was outside because she was literally after wetting herself laughing.
Ah, you made that up.
No, honest to God, no, honest to God, yeah.
Do you, so you have a relationship with your mother where she will say to you, normal conversation, I have to fart.
Yeah,
she like, would. She wouldn't like, just kind of have she just kind of wouldn't have walked away, gone outside the front door and come back in again. No,
because she, it was payback. It was like, I'm going to, in her head, she was probably thinking, I'm going to do this now to teach you a lesson for bringing me into these places with you. Like, she's often done it. We could be in Aldi and she'll just let her rip her, and I'm like, Mom. She blames on everyone else, like.
Does she know? Forgive me, your mother is still with us, is she?
She is, yeah.
Is she aware that you're telling me this on live radio?
She is. She's downstairs listening.
What?
She's downstairs listening. She'll kill me. I told her, I said, Red FM might be ringing me. And she goes, why? And I said, because I entered a competition. And she goes, for what? And I said, for Mother's Day, to send you away because you deserve it. And she goes, okay. And what did you write? And I told her the story. And
she couldn't go into the Cork International Hotel for fear of mortification.
They'll have to put up a sign saying, enter at your own risk into the elevator.
What's your mother's name?
Fionnuala
the Farter.
Fionnuala the Farter. That's her nickname now forever. Everyone now around Ballyshannon is going to be calling her Fionnuala the Farter.
Get me off the air before I have a heart attack. Stay listening. The same thing happened to me about 6 months ago, right? I was down in a restaurant. I won't say where it was. It wasn't in Cork. It was in Kerry. And it was up paying, right? And the till was really near the tables, right? So I'm standing there with my card and your man is entering in all the food and is just about to give me the bill. So I'm there, he's right next to me. There's a table of six people literally about 2 feet away from me. And all of a sudden, there is this ferocious smell. So, right? So the waiter has farted. But of course, there's a guy standing, sitting next to me, and I'm just above him. And he turns around and looks up at me and says, oh, for God's sake, man. So I'm standing there like, I was speechless. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to say to him. It wasn't me. It was him. It wasn't me. So I know the feeling when you can be wronged in a case like that. But anyway, Nikki, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm okay. Oh my God. Tina and Tara, can you beat either of those stories?
Neil, I could write a book now on my mother and the embarrassment that she puts me through with it. You know what? We look back at it and we laugh. You have to laugh at it. And to top that story off about the labour ward.
She was literally, she took, that. Yeah, so this is the one I read earlier on where you were going through labour, but she was showing all of the signs.
O'Neill, she said she did the whole 9 months pregnancy herself.
And did she really sit down with the face cloth and, you know, swab her brow with it and swab her lips?
I couldn't even talk. I literally couldn't even talk. And then I'm looking at her, she's laying down. And it was the Erinville at the time, so, you know, they were kind of older nurses and there was a nun popped in at one stage. But there was a younger girl there and it was her first delivery. I remember she actually said her name was Ella. And I'd say she was looking going, this is like faulty turn. She said, well, ago. But to top it all off, she had gone into the hotel in Patrick Street, where Easton's is now. What was the name of the hotel?
Where Easton's is now? Oh, Victoria Hotel.
Yeah, the Victoria Hotel. Yeah. She had went in there when I was about 5 or 6 months pregnant to see a medium. He had come over from England. And I didn't want to find out whether it was a boy or a girl. I wanted a surprise at the end of it. But lo and behold, anyway, she went into your man and he told her, I was having a boy. So in the midst of her collapsing and getting her temperature checked and all her breathing, when the baby was born, she says, I'll have to ring my sister. So she rang her sister. Oh my God, he's beautiful. Next, and the midwife says, it's a girl. A girl? Fortune teller told me it was a boy. Are you sure? It's fucking dangerous.
You, I bet you have a Northside mother, do you?
Oh, she's Northside, but you know what, Neil? She has a heart of gold. She'd do anything for anyone.
So the nurses found her very funny because at one stage she asked them to check her temperature. You're in labour now in the bed. Check my temperature because I feel very weak.
I remember my lips were like so dry and it was like a toothpick, like a swab. And the nurse gave her a cup of water and said, will you just dab her lips there? She said to keep her hydrated. Next thing I looked, my mother was panned out, but she was swabbing her lips.
Oh my God. All right, we're going to have a great week. I can tell you that. We're going to have a great week story-wise. Thank you to Nikki. Thank you to Tara. Thank you to Tina. What do we think, guys? Can I just say that I'm assuming that the rest of the week will be as entertaining or even as mortifying as this morning. But in the event that they're not, it doesn't mean that if you don't win today, that you're not in the running for a week, for an overnight at the Cork International Hotel. It will all depend on the stories we have tomorrow. And because this morning, it will be hard to separate them. They're just that good. But the Cork International Hotel has given us Sunday lunch for two in the New Yorker Bar at the Cork International Hotel, overnight stay for two in a deluxe room, breakfast the following morning in the Atlantic restaurant, and 2 hours private access to the in-house cinema to relax and enjoy a movie with your loved ones. None of those, well, certainly, let me put it this way, right? Let me put it this way. Tara.
Hello.
All right. I'm going to give you the prize for yourself and Fionnuala the farter.
Oh, thank you. Oh, thanks very much. She actually deserves it because she's battled cancer and everything.
Oh, well, I'm glad. I'm glad that she's fighting the good fight and she deserves an overnight away. But she needs to be on best behaviour at dinner, at lunch, at breakfast. At least when you're in the cinema, it will only be the two of you because it would be different if she was in with lots of other people in the cinema at the Cork International.
I know. Right? I'm going to have to get earplugs because she's actually a bad snorer too.
I can't wait for you to report back to me after your weekend at the Cork International Hotel. I really can't. But I would also suggest bring a clothes peg or something, yeah?
Yeah, and just lock her into the bathroom or something.
Well, enjoy it. She deserves it for the mortification her daughter has put you through. But do report back on how you get on at the International Hotel up by the airport. Okay, well done. Delighted for you.
Thanks very much. Bye.
Happy Mother's Day to Fionnuala for this coming Sunday. I wonder if it's diet related. Who knows? Anyway, keep those stories coming. Text 0868 104 106, and indeed if you want to share by email, neil@redfm.ie. Have a good day. I'll see you tomorrow.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.